And welcome back to Coast. Now we will talk to two individuals responsible for the documentary, The Afterlife Investigations, what they believe to be unusual evidence for life after death. There'll be two special guests. I'll introduce them in a moment. Tim Coleman with us for the full 2 hours. Robin Foy with us for 1 hour. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let me introduce our two guests. First of all, Tim Coleman, award-winning British-American journalist, documentary filmmaker. He co-produced, co-directed the UFO-related documentary Out of the Blue. He has just completed The Afterlife Investigations, which is a feature-length documentary on some very unusual evidence for life after death ever presented. Tim has worked for the BBC television as an assistant editor as well. Tim, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, George. Very well. How you doing?
Good. Looking forward to this. And, of course, Robin Foy is one of just a handful of people through very unique experiences and very intensive research has gained a special knowledge and workings of physical mediumship. Robin has been heavily involved in psychic research, and here he is. Robin, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good. My pleasure to have you both here. Tim, did you work with James Fox a little bit on Out of the... Is it the same one? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we co-produced and co-directed that one.
He's a good guy. Loves UFOs, doesn't he?
He's crazy about them.
One of a kind. Tim, first of all, give me an overview of The Afterlife Investigations and then your involvement with Robin here.
Okay, so basically I was actually asked to make 3 films on the subject of life after death. I'm still in the process of doing that. So The Afterlife Investigations is part one. There'll be 2 more parts coming. It's a huge subject, as you know, George.
Yeah.
So you can't squeeze it all into sort of 60 minutes or 90 minutes. I came across the skull experiment after sort of being really interested in ITC, which I was already making a film partly about that. And, of course, skull covers the whole range of phenomena from sort of mediumship, physical mediumship, communication using technologies through various devices that Robin will tell you about. And all sorts of other phenomena, which is quite complex. So I basically decided that time to look really exclusively at skull for the first film. And then when I came to edit it, I decided to include in some more material. So I've also put in the work of Marcello Bacci, who is Italy's probably most famous medium, because he's able to get the voices, purportedly the voices of spirits, through his radio, which is a very unusual form of spirit communication. And he's been going for sort of decades, been investigated by scientists, and nobody so far has ever found any shred of evidence that he's hoaxing it. Quite the opposite, really. And I also included some EVP footage, EVP samples from mothers who'd lost their children, who were still communicating with them via EVP. And there's also Alison Dubois, because there was an experiment done with, because one of the investigators of the skull experiment actually tragically died shortly after we'd shot the film.
Oh, geez.
Of a heart attack or something like that, while he was actually in a lecture in London, actually debating with skeptics. So he kind of went out with his boots on. And we then asked Gary Schwartz really to set up a mediumistic session with Alison Dubois, who everybody knows because she's the sort of real-life inspiration behind the TV show Medium. And she was able to get some very interesting information about how Montague Keane died. So that's basically the content of the film.
Okay, now let's bring in Robin for a moment here. Robin, let's talk a little bit about your work as a medium and how you got into this.
Right, well, I'm not actually a medium as such, but I'm more of a psychic researcher. I've been involved in physical mediumship quite intimately for about 39 years now. So I've had a lot of experience of physical phenomena, which includes an awful lot of phenomena in the traditional way, using ectoplasm, which people have talked about for 150 years plus now. But in fact, what was happening at Skoll was a brand new form that was pioneered by the Skoll team and by a spirit team that were working with us that used only energy, which was a brand new way of doing it, but it allowed for much more and much more varied phenomena to take place.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about this Skoll investigation and this experiment. Robin or Tim, Which one of you would like to explain this?
I think you go, Robin.
Yeah, okay. Well, the main participants, really, in the skull experiment were four of us, my wife, Sandra, and me, and two deep trance mediums, Diana and Alan Bennett. It was mainly held at our home, which was a 17th century farmhouse in the village of Skull, which is actually in the East Anglia area of the UK. But we also demonstrated the phenomena that was developed overseas in various places, including California in the USA, Netherlands, but also in Germany, Switzerland, Ibiza, and Ireland. The idea of the experiment was that we set out to prove the existence of life after death in a physical way and in a scientific way, with the help and cooperation of a team of spirit personalities who worked with us. The type of phenomena that we received, just in brief at the moment, were apports, which are actually little gifts that are brought by spirit people and sort of materialized from midair. We had levitation of various things, tables, for instance. I mean, in California, we had a round table that levitated, turned on its side. It had five crystals sort of sitting on the table. It spun round like a Catherine wheel. When it sort of returned to the earth, the crystals had not fallen off or moved in any way at all. That was quite amazing. We had various forms of spirit lights, full and partial materialization of spirit people. Also, we had sort of spirit photography, which was a whole different thing. There were so many different types of phenomena that occurred it'd be impossible to sort of fill it all into a small space of time. But in actual fact, we counted over 100 different forms of phenomena that we got. One of them, which was totally different as well, was a musical phenomena where a spirit team, if you like, sort of played a complete band in front of about 20, 30 people, which included sort of simultaneously two different drum kits being played. That was quite amazing at the time, obviously. And the first time that we had anything with the musical phenomena was in Ibiza. We were staying there with a Swiss businessman. He just decided he was going to put a trumpet on the table in front of him in such a way that it would have been impossible for any one of us that were sitting there to have played it. But nevertheless, the trumpet played. So very, very interesting stuff altogether. And on another occasion, we had a miniature UFO materialized in the room. In fact, that happened several times, but it flew around the room. Sort of sitting a few inches in front of people's eyes with little lights coming out of portholes in it. And, we had at a later stage of it, we actually had quite a bit of communication with people from other dimensions. So amazing stuff.
At this point, Robin, what did you conclude about the skull experiments?
We developed it. It was a cooperation between ourselves and a spirit team. Most of the spirit team were actually people who had been scientists themselves in their lifetimes. They always sort of proved their bona fides to us. At the beginning of the experiment, they proved to us exactly who they were, giving us information about themselves that none of us knew and was not generally known to the public. But after much research, we were able to discover exactly who they were. And one of the first photographs we received in there was one of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who I'm sure you're aware wrote the Sherlock Holmes stories. And he was very interested in this type of thing in his lifetime. There was a photograph of him, and he was one of the people working with us. They all used pseudonyms. He called himself Edwin. And the reason that they used pseudonyms, basically fairly famous people, was that they wanted the attention to be drawn to the phenomena and not to who they might or might not be, which would have sort of gone off at a tangent.
Tim, right before you two came on, I had another guest who was talking about his book, Psychic Blues, where he contends that 85 to 90% of the psychics out there or mediums are frauds. As a documentary producer, would you say that you've seen enough where you would refute that, or how would you comment on that?
I can't come up with an exact figure. You know,
it's
a bit like the UFO subject, where I think 95% of that's total rubbish. With any of these situations, you're going to get a lot of people who either just are completely mad or are trying to perpetrate an active hoax, for attention or for money. The thing is that, and the history of physical mediumship, as well as Robin will tell you, is also littered with all sorts of interesting cases of fakery, especially in the Victorian days when, this was more like a parlor game.
Sure.
People would do this, every evening for entertainment. And so you naturally it attracted a lot of hoaxes and people trying to make a fast buck, And especially after the First World War, when so many people died, and this was people were turning to spiritualism as a way of, dealing with that grief and trying to communicate with their lost loved ones. A lot of people took advantage of that. And, today the situation is, it's just about money for a lot of people doing it. I mean, a lot of stuff we see on television is just total rubbish. And in fact, I reacted to that situation and said, well, this really annoys me. I want to find something that's a genuine article. And when I came across the Skoll experiment, I definitely found it because this was the genuine article.
Robin, it's got to infuriate you, drive you crazy with some of these people who are out there to trick other people.
Yeah, it doesn't give the whole subject a good name, I'm afraid. If you throw enough mud, some of it sticks. But unfortunately, there are people out there who are fraudulent. But I also, because of my vast experience in physical mediumship, I've come across a large number of people who are physical mediums who produce quite wonderful phenomena. Most of those, of course, working in the more traditional way with the substance known as ectoplasm. But I have seen so much. But because of the fact I've seen so much, I've actually started various organizations myself that are involved in physical mediumship. And we've seen several people come along to us who claim to be the best physical medium in the world, and have on several occasions actually proved them to be totally fraudulent. But from my own experience, I do know that there are a large number, I would say, in the whole world, no more than perhaps 20 physical mediums who produce some wonderfully genuine stuff, which they demonstrate to the public.
What can you conclude, Robin, about what might be on the other side?
It's a world, in a way it's a little bit like ours, but I think it's actually a little bit more vivid than our own physical world here. There is nothing physical there. So everything is done in the spirit world by thought. And you can actually create things by thought. Thought can produce images and so forth and so on, which remain solid to the spirit people, but are not in reality solid as such. I think you would probably describe them as being the spiritual essence of things that are here on Earth. They appear exactly the same, but in fact, there's no reality to them. They are just images.
Tim, as a producer, how do you illustrate this? Tell me a little bit about the afterlife investigations.
Well, it certainly with Skoll, it was a major challenge to make it visual. Besides Talking Head, what have you got? You've got four people essentially sitting in a cellar in this beautiful 17th century farmhouse in pitch darkness. So not a lot going on visually. But fortunately, the Skoll group were sort of able to record a huge amount of what they did. So there's about Robin sort of recorded about 1,000 hours, I think, of spirit communication.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you have to understand, first of all, that Skoll is unprecedented. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic to sort of say that it's probably one of the best afterlife experiments ever done in the history of the paranormal, because so much stuff actually happened. It's a real challenge even to get that into one film. Sorry, I've lost my thread. What were we saying?
Well, as a producer, how difficult was it to illustrate it?
Yeah, it was. They also had a lot of visual material. So there were video experiments done that Robin will explain, which were called Project Alice, where they set up a video camera mostly in a darkened room, pointing it at a mirror, a bit like a sort of psychomantium setup, if you like.
Yeah.
And that was actually, they were able to capture sort of extraordinary images which were paranormally created, which ended up on videotape and could be played back. So there was quite a lot of that, which the sort of spirit faces were appearing, very strange geometric forms, and also sort of people appearing as well, which was even more remarkable. So there was that to illustrate it. There was a whole lot of photographs that were created paranormally. They had essentially gone into the cellar, put a sort of, at first the film was put in a camera. The camera was actually then levitated, moved around over their heads with the shutter clicking. And then when the film was processed, it was later on it was done with Polaroid film, so it could be processed immediately. These remarkable images, a whole series of remarkable images were created. Some of them were sort of abstract symbols. Some of them were poetry. A lot of them actually related to sort of various clues that the investigators actually had to decipher in order to know who was behind these communications. So there was a lot of visual material.
We've got one that you supplied to us, which is really weird. It's eerie. It's part of the trailer as well. We've got a link. Looks like it was done in 1998. Those images, did you get lots like that?
Well, I mean, actually, you know, let Robin answer that.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, there were a tremendous number of images made in several different ways. As Tim mentioned in the beginning, the very first experiments we had two cameras that were loaded with 35 millimeter films. Our spirit team, there are four different ways in which they communicated with us, which I'll clarify in a moment. But in fact, they asked one of the sitters to levitate, to pick up a camera, point it into the center of the room, which was in total darkness, and take pictures whenever they said now, which she did. But the second camera then proceeded to levitate and go around the room and take its own pictures. And that was the first way it happened. And then they said to us, well, actually, we don't really need the cameras anymore. So if you buy sort of shop sealed films, and we started to use Polaroid 35 millimeter films at that stage.
Okay.
And we had a little device provided by Polaroid that would actually develop them on the spot. If you use those, don't take them out of the shop wrapping. Leave them actually in a film roll and just place them on the table. And we would find after the sitting when we processed those that there'd be anything up to 11, 12 different images on there and of all sorts of different things. And then eventually, when we started working with some scientists who, as a proper investigation, we actually started to put these films into a sealed box, which they sealed. They had their own lock to it, and the key to the lock was locked into their cars. And it was done, obviously, for security to make sure that we didn't do anything that was fraudulent. And then, same thing, when they were taken out and developed after the session, there were all sorts of amazing things on there.
And
we started working with video cameras. Then we actually got moving images of some of these things, including the one that is an image of what you would sort of call a grey, perhaps, in UFO speak, but in actual fact, he was blue, so he became blue. But we had so many of these different images, which some of them actually included pictures of scenes in the spirit world, which was fascinating.
Robin, hold on for a second. We're going to take this quick break. You and Tim Coleman will be back. We'll talk about more of how you're able to capture these entities when we come right back. Well, next hour, filmmaker Tim Coleman will stay with us and take your phone calls. We'll be back with both him and Robin Foy in just a moment as we talk about their work with the Afterlife Investigations. And welcome back to Coast with Tim Coleman, Robin Foy. Robin, how did we get the images on digital or on film? What technically is out there that allows that to be captured?
That's a very interesting question, and that's something that I'm not able to actually answer because it was done by a specialist team of spirit people and technologists that sort of worked with it. I'm not a camera buff myself, but basically they were able in some way and mentally to put these images on the film, and that's how it was done. Apart from on occasions when we were using the video camera, we were actually capturing the picture of one or other personalities from other dimensions that were present with us. There was a portal in the room that was produced by the spirit team, and through that portal, these various spirit personalities were able to enter the room. They were then, it was very much like the old system on the Starship Enterprise, where basically sort of beam me up Scotty type of thing,
yeah,
where they were able to enter through this portal, and then mentally they were able to give themselves more substance, so that they then became totally materialized and totally solid, and they could touch us, interact with us, etc. And in fact, on one occasion, I had my own parents who'd passed came and materialized, and I was able to recognize their voices, and we were able to hug one another. So you know, it's quite amazing stuff.
Could you feel them?
Oh, most definitely. They're quite normal. I mean, they were warm and appeared to be just totally normal.
And how did they leave? The same way?
Very much the same way. I mean, it was some sort of system that they'd worked with, the energy that they were working with us, that allowed them to be able to extract, if you like, the physical things from somebody's body and replace them with just what we would call the spiritual essence of the person, which we can then see but isn't physically solid. And this is something actually that they explained to us is really what happens when we die, in that we remain exactly the same as we were in a physical body, except that we sort of get rid of the physical body rather like an overcoat we've finished with, and the spiritual essence remains, which is the real us.
What would have happened if a human being, a person, one of your researchers, had gone through that portal?
Well, we wouldn't have survived, but we were told, and what they were working towards was a situation where we could actually eventually have gone through these portals. So that was something that was on the agenda. They were working towards that.
Tim, can you tell us a little bit about Marcello Bacci? I'm going to play a little clip, a little voice print in a moment here, but tell me exactly about him as Italy's most unusual medium.
Okay, well, Bacci is he's an elderly man. He's in his 80s. He's quite an ordinary man. He sort of lives in a town called Grosseto, and which is north of Rome. And he sort of, you know, has a little shop selling appliances like washing machines and radios. But he's been long interested in the spiritual matters. I think he attended a seance in about 1945, which profoundly affected him and pushed him in that direction. And so he started experimenting with all sorts of different ways of communicating with spirit, but primarily using technical devices. So it started out with EVP, mm-hmm. using tape recorders, and he actually got some messages via EVP that spirit was saying to him, no, try a radio, which, you know, was a kind of novel way of trying to communicate with spirit. So he started doing that, and he used an old sort of 1950s tube amplified radio to do this, and he is quite remarkable. I mean, when I went down there, I went down to Crosetto to film him, and he has a little center there where people from all over the world can come and visit and have a sort of session, and that used to be about once a month, once every 2 months. And people who've lost loved ones, often parents who've lost their children tragically, go there, and frequently, you know, on a fairly regular basis, he's able to get the spirits to come through his radio and talk directly to the people who have lost their children. They can hear their voices. They can recognize the voices. They're often identified by their own name. So it'd be like, me, it's Tim, I'm here, I'm still here, or something like that. So it's very easy to identify for the parents to identify who's actually speaking, identify the child.
Does he know why this works?
No, it's quite clear, however, that he from researchers who've been studying him, he's a medium. This is a mediumistic ability, because you can take his radio, and other researchers have tried this, and you can fiddle around forever and you won't get any results. So there's something about him. He's the channel. So there's three things. There's the spirit, there's the radio, and him, which are creating a circuit. But without him, there's no communication.
Fascinating. Now, Robin, before I play this voice print comparison, tell me what a voice print comparison is.
It's basically done by physicists who are able to look at a particular voice and then compare it. That's a voice that's already been received from somebody who's on Earth or what have you, and then they can play a similar voice that's been received through spirit, and then they compare the two to sort of see how they marry up.
And now,
Tim. Add here that a voice print is like a fingerprint. It's biometric. You can identify a person
right.
Their voice. Everybody's voice is absolutely unique. So that's why it's so crucial when you have a recording of somebody alive and you compare it with somebody who's dead, as it were, then, you know, those voice prints will be able to identify that person. If you can if they're the same voice print, they can match, then you know that's coming from the same individual.
We're going to play this voice print, the Bocce voice print, and have you, Tim, or you, Robin, explain it afterward. Here we go.
Using software endorsed by the FBI, Il Laboratorio have conducted voice print analysis. Like a fingerprint, a voice print is unique. It can therefore be used to determine someone's identity with near certainty. They compared voice prints from two audio samples. One was the voice of Chiara Lenzi, recorded before she died. The other came out of Bacci's radio after her death and was clearly recognized by her father. The comparison produced a 97% match.
That's huge, Tim.
Yes, I mean, there will be some debate over how accurate that is, but I mean, this was done by Il Laboratorio, who are a group of investigators and scientists, and some of them are audio experts, using this very interesting software the FBI uses to identify people through voice print analysis. So it's a very accurate, you know, system. And it's just totally remarkable that, you know, you have a situation where you can actually compare the voice of the living person with the voice of the dead person. How many times does that happen? And, you know, this is the figure they came up with. It's astonishing.
Robin, what can you tell us about life after death, about the other side? I mean, there are many people who don't believe it exists. We interviewed one today, but a lot of people think it does. What do you think?
I can say that since I've been involved very intimately with physical phenomena and various types of mediumship altogether over the last 39 years, I started out really as a researcher with a belief that there may be life after death. And I can honestly say now that after 39 years research, I no longer believe in life after death, because I know it to be a fact, and there's a heck of a difference between knowledge and belief.
Well, there sure is. There sure is. And Tim, when you were doing the part of this documentary, something happened with your infrared cameras. Can you tell me what you captured?
Oh, okay. You're talking about down in Bocce's center. Yeah, that was interesting because basically I came into the scene long after Skoll, you know, sort of 10
years
after Skoll had been done, the experiment
right.
had been done. So that was very much a retrospective look at the experiment. So I was very keen on trying to get something actually happening in front of the camera. Of course, that's extremely difficult in paranormal circles because these things are very fleeting often, although, you know, the Skoll experiment went on for 5 years and they had regular stuff going on every week, every month. But there isn't anything like that going on quite to the extent of Skoll. There is stuff going on, but nothing is as successful as Skoll has ever been. It's the most successful ever, and it hasn't been duplicated yet. But anyway, Bocce, as I said, this was going on a regular basis. So it enabled me to go down there and film him doing one of his radio sessions. The first night, nothing actually happened. There were a lot of people there sitting. It was very, very hot. It was the middle of the summer. Nothing happened.
The next day, he then said to me, "Oh, do you want to come next door? We're going to do a seance." I didn't actually know he did seances. So I said, "Oh, fine, great. Can I film it?" And he said, "Yes." So we had a couple of infrared, you know, night shot cameras, infrared cameras, to cover it. And, you know, in the first session, I went to two, there were table levitations, which astonished me. I'd never experienced that before. The medium was going into trance. But what was most interesting were the apports, which is what Robin had been talking about and happened frequently at Skoll, these objects that suddenly sort of materialize out of nowhere and appear in the seance room. Now, what happened with me is that I was sitting there in total darkness, and then I felt all these petals falling on me. And then when the lights went on a few minutes later, the whole place was covered in flowers.
Wow.
Which had basically appeared out of nowhere.
Nowhere. Yeah.
It was astonishing. I mean, it was probably one of the most remarkable experiences I've ever had.
That's bizarre. Back to the Skoll experiments for a moment. How was this conceived, Robin? Who conceived it? Who put it together?
My wife and I had been involved in a number of groups before Skoll, just that, we'd had various different phenomena that had developed through that. But we moved home to Skoll, and we decided that we would build another group. So that's how it all started. And we got together in the early stages, a group of seven people that through natural wastage fell back to just four of us. Within a very short space of time, we developed this amazing range of different phenomena, which is far, far more than most physical mediums ever get in their lifetime. And we learned through the trance mediums that were working with us, because two of the people sitting in the group were deep trance mediums. We learned through the communication that came through them that this was being done in a totally different way, using only a combination of three different types of energy, which were put together to form what you might call a creative energy, which the spirit team could then use to produce the phenomena. It's totally different from the way it worked in the old days, where one medium would go into deep trance and produce this substance called ectoplasm, which was then used to mold different spirit materializations, etc. It was more of a sort of modern form, in fact. Now, I mean, I have a free website that there's 2,000 people all over the world belong to, including a number in the States, who are running their own groups based on a basic guide, which was dictated by our spirit team to us at Skoll. Many of them are already getting very, very good results. So it's, you know, it is actually proliferating. Now there are more and more people getting involved in being able to develop it over time and producing very good results.
Would you like to give out that website?
Yes, certainly. It's the website is http://. It's physical phenomena four, that's the number four, and the letter U, .ning.com. It's free, and anybody can join, basically. And if they're interested in this subject, they'll find an awful lot of people on there who are all already interested in the subject and developing their own groups.
What does Skoll, spelled S-C-O-L-E, stand for?
It's the name of a village.
Ah.
In the Norfolk County of the UK.
Okay. And that's primarily where all this occurred?
It is indeed. I mean, we had a cellar there where most of these sittings took place. And also, the spirit team asked us to go to different parts of the world to demonstrate it, which we did. And we had a month-long tour out in California, where it was demonstrated in Los Angeles and places just outside San Francisco. And very, very amazing results occurred over there as well.
Okay, we're going to play this brief clip, this clip, using a TDC device, which is a device that means trans-dimensional recorder, right? Communication device?
Trans-dimensional communication device, yeah.
All right, let's play this little clip. I'll get ready. Let's play this one more time, David, if you can. And let's listen it. Go ahead. There's something there. Tim, what do you think it is?
I think it's Einstein something communication. Robin, what exactly does it say? I've forgotten now.
It actually says transdimensional communication.
Oh, thank you.
Strange voices. And you don't hear these until you go back and listen to the recorder, right?
No, that's totally different. You hear these hear this at the time.
You do? Okay. And
this device.
That's a big difference.
We were asked to build it by the Spirit team, but there was a blueprint provided for us on a film, psychically, that was provided by Thomas Edison and signed. There was a drawing of how we should construct it, and it was signed TAE. And the investigators that were sort of working scientifically and investigating us from over the years actually got in touch with the Edison Institute, who sent them a photocopy of a memo signed in 1926 by Thomas Edison with the initials TAE. And when the initials on his memo were compared with the initials on the film that we received psychically, they were virtually identical.
Are we dealing here, Robin, with an energy source, something that's so natural?
Yeah, it's all very natural. There are three different types of energy that are put together and blended by a spirit team. The first of these is natural energy, which exists on the Earth, and this exists in various geographical locations in the way of spirals or columns of energy. And then the spirit team themselves brought a second energy from the spirit realms, if you like, which was combined with this. And then the third energy was the sort of spiritual energy of all the sitters in the room. So these three energies were combined together and produced a creative energy, which could then be used by the spirit team to produce all sorts of different phenomena.
It is remarkable how that is done. Most of the researchers that have been involved in this, do they all come away with the same thoughts and theories like Dr. Schwartz?
In fact, yes. The three main principal guys that did the investigation, they've all passed the spirit themselves now, but they produced a book called The Skoll Report for the SPR, that's the Society of Psychical Research, in which basically they came out in favor of everything involved in the Skoll experiment being 100% genuine, which in itself was a first for the SPR, the society, because generally they've always been extremely negative with regard to anything of a physical mediumship nature. And in this case, the three of them who investigated this over a two-year period came out in favor of it being genuine.
If some of these experiments can be reproduced, and some say they can be, does that negate the fact that they could still be real?
No. I mean, in fact, they are extremely real. And anybody who is in the room at the time can hear any of the voices that are produced independently in midair, as we very often had, can see anything that happens. They can see spirit lights. They can see the levitation of various objects in the room. And when we had materialized people actually with us in the room, they can interact with them.
Well, that's pretty remarkable.
They can hug them.
That is remarkable indeed. I know, Robin, you have to leave. Your wife's having some surgery. Tim's going to stay with us and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM.